No one should have to choose between feeding their family and being able to afford basic hygiene products. One in five people who menstruate are likely to experience period poverty this year. United Way Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington's Period Promise donation drive helps ensure no one in our community has to choose between basic needs and period products. From March 1st to March 31st, 2025, community members are encouraged to donate tampons, pads, liners, and other menstrual products. For drop-off locations and more information, visit unitedwaykfla.ca/periodpromise. You can make a difference locally.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat. Beat.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat.
Beat.
Join us every Thursdays at 1 on CIC for your special time with your favorite nuclear family.
My name is Aiden.
And this is Ella.
And you're listening to The Only Show.
Beat Banter.
On CFRC Radio.
Beat.
Banter.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Jaya Kumar, and Abiyaz Karim. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Public Health Ontario reported a surge of measles cases in Ontario last week, with an additional 120 cases added to the total count. This brings the total to 440 cases of measles across the province since the start of 2025. Prior to outbreaks beginning near the end of 2024, there were only 101 confirmed cases of measles reported in Ontario between 2013 to 2023. While no cases have been reported in Kingston, the Southeast Health Unit, which includes the region, has reported 32 cases in Hastings County. According to a release from the Southeast Health Unit, all 32 cases in Hastings County involve individuals who are not previously immunized against measles. The Southeast Health Unit and Ontario Health Authorities have been encouraging residents to check their immunization records and remain up to date on recommended vaccines to limit the spread of the highly contagious virus. Dr. Ethan Tumache, Southeast Health Unit Deputy Medical Officer of Health, spoke with CFRC about the risk level in the Kingston region.
I think when you're looking broadly, there's another number of factors that be increasing the risk generally about measles. When you take a perspective of what's happening, certainly within Ontario, we're seeing a significant number of cases across multiple health units, and particularly of people, number of areas within the southwest of the province that have high case numbers, that if you have exposure, you're traveling in those areas, that might be a risk. But when we look into the broader context of within North America, we're seeing higher rates of measles and then abroad as well. Significant circulation of measles. So there is a risk that is present. I would say when we're looking now, there is a lot of community protection because we have fairly high vaccination rates, and going back, vaccination against measles is the most important way to protect your health. So those are things that mitigate the risk overall, but it's important to be aware of, especially if people are planning travel in the coming months, or in particular, if people have feel they've been exposed or been in places where they've heard that there's a measles case or been contacted from public health units, or if there's exposure settings that are identified, those are particular risks to be aware of.
As Dr. Tumache noted, Kingston is a community with a higher vaccination rate. Provincially, only 70% of children aged 7 were reported to be fully vaccinated against measles in the 2023-24 school year, representing a significant decline since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. While there was a slight dip in the Kingston region during and following the pandemic, the latest data for Kingston shows just over 96% of children aged 7 are vaccinated.
We have high rates in the community, so this protects us because going to what measles in the very beginning, this is a highly infectious virus. And that's why we see it spread very rapidly where there might be people who are unprotected. And going back to the cases that we have seen in our region, all of the cases that we've seen are amongst people who were previously unvaccinated. So if there's if there is an exposure and someone is not protected from the vaccine, there's a high likelihood that they're going to get it. So that's going to be the biggest way that you can protect yourself. So going back to where people are getting those vaccinations early on or catching up with the schedules, that provides that background immunity that's going to protect both the individual and then the community against wider spread of the virus.
Mm-hmm. And is there a reason that Kingston has a higher vaccination rate than maybe other areas?
I wouldn't be able to comment fully on all the explanations. I think there's been a lot of efforts in terms of both how education is coming out from healthcare partners, from public health, as well on work. And this, I want to attach this back of these would be vaccinations that people are accessing through their healthcare providers, through the public health unit. So I think there's a combination of factors. Anytime that you're looking at what vaccine rates or what people perceptions of vaccine are. So it's a longer conversation. Going back to what people should do is to know your vaccination status. And if people that getting up to date on your vaccines is the most important way to protect yourself, especially if you feel that you might be at risk or you're going to a spot that there might be higher risk of measles. And if you have questions about it, you can always go to the public health website or contacting your local healthcare provider or public health would be good places to have your questions answered.
Kingston residents are able to check their immunization records and book an immunization appointment through the Kingston Frontenacs, Lennox, and Addington Public Health website or by calling their healthcare provider. The end of the school year is looking uncertain as we enter week three of the Queen's Graduate Student Workers Strike. In addition to the direct impact of teaching assistants, teaching fellows, and postdoctoral scholars being on strike, many professors at Queen's have also invoked their collective agreement right to not cross the picket line. Professors showed their support for workers on strike at a teach-in on Friday, March 21st, as well as in an open letter to Principal Patrick Dean, Provost Matthew Evans, and the Board of Trustees, signed by 179 faculty members so far. The open letter urges the university to work on ending the strike before the end of the term, reporting a list of disruptions to teaching, learning, and research on campus, including dozens of courses taught by teaching fellows and hundreds of labs and tutorials now on hold, assessments being canceled, research put on hold, and papers being left ungraded. Professors and various faculties delivered impassioned lectures before the lively crowd at the teach-in in front of Richardson Hall on Friday. Dr. Margaret Papineau, a professor in the English department, had the following to say.
And I want to say to Patrick Dean and Matthew Evans, get our students back to class. This is not normal. Students on the picket line is not normal. It's not business as usual. It is wrong. Yeah! You need it, Evans. You are responsible for suspending the learning at this institution. Yeah. Administration is asking faculty to give students grades. Grades that will not truly assess what a student has done in a course. And that is wrong. Yeah. If they care about learning, they would do everything in their power to get students back into the classroom. So in closing, I just want to say to our principal and provost, we are not fools. You did not bargain in good faith. Do it over.
While Friday's teach-in was well attended, professors have been having a mix of responses to the strike. Undergraduates are seeing some classes put on halt or heavily modified, while others continue as planned. Dr. Susan Lord, a professor in the Department of Film and Media and acting department head of gender studies, had the following message for colleagues who are continuing classes as scheduled.
I wish more of my colleagues were here. Because how can we be a good colleague to all of our grad students and our TAs and our TFs and our RAs while supporting undergraduate students? We can do it by not being a scrape, by not crossing a picket line, and by using our very beautiful and very rare right to use Article 12.3.C to show solidarity and explain to your students why.
The latest update on the Queen's Labor News page reads as following, quote, Queen's respects the collective bargaining process and the work of PSAC Unit 1 members, and we remain committed to reaching an agreement. 10 working days ago, the university presented a comprehensive and competitive offer to PSAC. We are disappointed that PSAC chose to not respond and instead elected to strike. We will continue to bargain terms and conditions of employment in good faith. And our objective is to achieve a negotiated tentative agreement to renew the collective agreement that both parties can ratify. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Good evening, folks. I'm Avias from CFRC News, and you are listening to our segment, Campus Corner. Here we bring you the latest updates from Queen's campus. This evening, we will be discussing TheoFest, a mini festival showcasing 12 solo performances by students from DRAM 439. The event will be held at Theological Hall from Friday, March 28th at 6:30 p.m. to Saturday, March 29 at 10 p.m. We have the organizers and performers in the studio to share more about the festival and what to expect. Hello everyone, it's great to have you all in studio today. Thanks for joining us. May you all please give a quick introduction of yourself for our audience members.
My name is Kelsey Jacobson, and I'm an assistant professor in the Dan School of Drama and Music.
I'm Skylar James. I'm a fourth year media and performance production student.
I am Grace Delamere, and I am a fourth year student in the Joint Honors Drama and Music program.
I'm Aiden Robert Bruce, and I am in my fourth year of my drama major.
It's wonderful to meet all of you. Thanks for joining us in studio. Can you give our audience a quick introduction of TheoFest, what it exactly is?
So TheoFest is a festival of 12 solo shows. This year, you can expect completely unique performances. There's some that will make you laugh, some that will make you cry. There are some in traditional theater spaces, and some that will take you all over Theological Hall, everywhere from the bathrooms to the chapel. There are some that will make you participate. You might make scary puppets or attend a sleepover party or become an angry mob. And overall, it's meant to be a showcase of graduating students and all the skills that they've developed. So acting, design, devising, but also producing an entire festival. So the marketing, the ticketing, all of the tasks that go along with it.
Amazing. So can you walk me through the creative process behind the TheoFest? How is it organized and everything that goes behind the curtains?
So we started the year. This was a full year course that we're performing this show for. We started the first semester with what we called scratch performances. So every week we'd get a different prompt and we would have to perform 5 to 10 minutes within that prompt of just anything, really. It was a big semester-long brainstorming session. And then after that semester ended, we sort of took all of our ideas that we generated through those scratch performances and came up with or expanded on pre-existing ideas for these shows. And then for the last semester, we've been collaborating with our classmates on writing, directing, acting, the tech side of all of these shows in a collaborative nature to produce them.
So linking to your previous answer, what have been the biggest challenges in preparing for this festival?
Yeah, so as we've mentioned, all of these are pretty much original works and solo works for the 12 students, as well as we have been producing the festival, and anything that is needed for it is done completely by us. So it's just been a mix of tackling absolutely everything necessary to create a festival of 12 performances, as well as putting on those 12 performances and living our lives.
That does sound super challenging. So what are some themes or messages that are being explored in this year's performances, and why are they important?
A lot of the shows are actually super personal to the people who created them in one way or another. A fair amount of them are autobiographical. So the person plays themselves or plays a version of themselves. And then a lot more deal with topics or themes or ways of showing art that the students thought there could be more of in art or that mean a lot to them. So the premise of the shows and the shows themselves are super personal to the students. And I think the theme of self-exploration is really prevalent in the showcase. But also why it's important is because we're giving students a voice. A voice for themselves, if it's an autobiographical show, or a voice to themes of art that they think art is important.
Amazing. So how do you hope this event impacts both the performers and the audience?
In general, one of the biggest things is the importance of vulnerability. That goes for both the performers and the audience. I think we learned throughout the process that we owe it to ourselves, but we also owe it to like the world as a whole to be vulnerable and to really put ourselves out there. And we've learned that in our process, and we hope that the audience kind of takes that away as well. And then going off of that, the importance of the arts in general in like a time where the arts are kind of being pushed down and pushed aside and people are trying to not give them as much support, we hope that people take away how important they are, because these 12 shows are such a beautiful representation of how important the arts are. And in general, we just want the audience to have a good time and enjoy these 12 different examples of what performance can be and what it is.
If any of our audience member wants to see the shows or participate as an audience, how may they do it?
Sure. We have shows Friday the 28th from 6:30 to 9:30 and Saturday the 29th from 6 to 9:30 p.m.
Do the audience need to sign up anywhere, register, or buy tickets?
You can find tickets. They are linked on our Instagram. So the Instagram handle is TheoFest, T-H-E-O-F-E-S-T 2025. All of the tickets are linked there. You just buy them through Queens. It's $2 a show or $5 per night if you want an entire night festival pass to see as many as you can.
Great. That actually brings us to the very end of our segment. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us in studio and best of luck with the fest. And that's a wrap. We were conversing with the organizer and performers of TheoFest. I'm Abias from CFRC News, and you are listening to our segment Campus Corner. Stay tuned for more updates. Over to Isabella for sports after.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, March 26th, daytime high of 4 degrees with that same 30% chance of precipitation dropping down to minus 3 overnight. Thursday, March 27th, a little bit warmer and nicer weather in the forecast, daytime high of 5 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud. Friday, March 28th, cooling back down a bit, dropping to 3 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to minus 3 overnight. Moving into the weekend, we are expected to see warmer temperatures on Saturday, March 29th. It's going to be a daytime high of 9 degrees, but we are going to see some mixed precipitation early in the day. Moving into Sunday, March 30th, daytime high of 6 degrees, but a 75% chance of rain throughout the day. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, March 31st, the last day of the month, is going to bring us a cloudy 3-degree day, dropping down to minus 3 overnight. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Reminder that reduced load restrictions are in effect in Kingston as of March 1st. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions can help reduce damage to roads in the spring. A complete list of roads with restrictions can be found in the traffic bylaw section of the City of Kingston website. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. A reminder that the Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is underway. The work will take place throughout all levels of the building and will include efforts such as routine structural maintenance, repainting, replacement of waterproofing materials, and upgrades to the building's mechanical and electrical systems. The work is planned to conclude in July of 2025. Other delays you should be aware of. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and accommodate increased traffic from the Wobbin Crossing.
Hello everyone, this is Henry, CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History, bringing you this week's concert and events calendars. On Wednesday, One Eye Jats will be hosting Board Game Night starting at 7. Queen's Players will continue their run of shows at the Mansion Wednesday night at 8. Tickets for this raucous evening and all following shows are available online on Zephy for $19. Folks can also head down to Musiki, which is hosting its weekly life drawing event. Don't forget to bring your own art supplies and $5 and participate in uninstructed life drawing. On Thursday, folks can head over to Domino Theater for their opening night performance of A Chorus Line. This evening show starts at 7:30 with tickets available online on Ticket Scene for around $35. Additional performances will continue through the week till April 6th. Folks can also head over to the Kingston Public Market, which will be open in Springer Market Square from 8:30 to 4 p.m. Daft Bruin will be hosting Drag Sing-Along Roulette from 7:30 to 10:30. Also, the Out in Front Weekly Run Group will be hosting its usual public run this Thursday, starting downtown at 6:15 p.m. in front of Runner's Choice. All people are invited regardless of ability, sex, sexual orientation, or gender identity. On Friday, The Buckle and Daft Brewing will both be hosting their weekly free karaoke nights. Doors open at 9. Next up, on Saturday, folks can head down to participate in the Runner's Choice East End Run Group at 7:50 a.m. at the K-Nets Kingston Supermart, 29 Niagara Park. Also on Saturday, the Kingston Public Market runs downtown from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. On Sunday morning, the Runner's Choice Lawn Run starts downtown outside their store at 8:20 a.m. All ages and paces are welcome. Daft Brewing will be hosting a free blue social and dance on Sunday evening from 4 to 6. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 1 p.m. at Memorial Center. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Hello again, this is still Henry Walker, CFRC intern with the Department of History, continuing with this week's concert calendar. On Wednesday, Canadian country music star Carole Baker will be performing at the final tour at the Kingston Grands starting at 7 p.m. Tickets for this performance are available online on the Kingston Grands website or in person at the Grand, both for around $79.50. Also on Wednesday, Hotel Wolf Island will be hosting its weekly free open mic with Mike Rapkins from 8:30 to 11:30 p.m. Frank Ryan will also be performing at Musiki at 8 Wednesday night. For Thursday night, folks can head over to the Ale House at 8 p.m. for this year's Ale Palooza, featuring four of Kingston's top student bands, the Astros, Blunt Force Llama, Rev Zed, and the winners of this past year's Queen's Music Club's Battle of the Bands, Last Call. Tickets for the show are available online on Bounce for $5. Also on Thursday, Trailer Swift Band will be playing a free gig at the Buckle from 8 to 11. The Grad Club is going to be having three bands on Thursday night for a show running from 7 to 10 p.m. with performances from Oak Ridge Ave, June Body, and Kira Johnson. Tickets are available online at Eventbrite for between $10 and $15. Thursday night is also going to see Ducks in the Attic playing at the Toucan from 10:30 to 2. The Grand will be having Brett Kessel performing as part of their Grand Onstage Presents series of curated shows starting Thursday night at 7:30. On Friday, the Buckle will be having three bands, Hair Smashed Action, Powdered Finger, and Revmatic, in for a show starting at 8 p.m. with tickets going for $10, available at the door. Whiskey Smoke will be playing at the club at the RCHA starting at 4. The Spire will be having a number of artists performing a collection of highlights from Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro at 7:30 on a Friday night. Tickets are available on the Kingston Symphony's website. Classical music fans can also head out down to St. James Anglican to see the Kingston Baroque Consort present a collection of well-known works by Bach and Handel from 5:15 to 7:15. Tickets for this performance are available for between $10 and $25 at Novel Idea by email or by calling 613-217-5099. For Saturday, folks can head over to the Broom Factory to catch Dom Lewis, Schoolhouse, and Annie Colunico at 7:30. Tickets are available online at Ticket Scene for around $15. Hotel Wolf Island will be hosting Jazz with Standards at 7 from 4 to 7 p.m. Also on Saturday, Bon Evans will be playing at Tiernanog at 9. And on Sunday, the Buttle will be hosting its open mic with Lucas Oak. The Keeldeers will be playing at Spearhead Brewery from 2 to 5 p.m. And as usual, Savannah Shea will be playing at Musiki on Sunday starting at 4:30. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from local band 5x5's debut album Grackle, released after 30 years of saying, One Day. The record explores the resilience required to endure life's challenges, whether as a means of self-preservation or a tool for self-growth. In a time when everyone faces their own struggles, the 11 tracks serve as a reminder that no one is alone. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Grackle by 5x5 on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it here called How We Survive with us right now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Like thunder, we miss the light. Outside is a flame, darkness will not fly. Knock is a warning, the bell rings. Stop the ringing, that can't certainly be arranged. Head down. Don't go softly, unless it's late. Curtains can't contain themselves, we can delay. Time passes slowly, but not enough. In the passage that leads to where we're growing up. Head down. Down. Yeah.
listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
You know, the policy says you're incapable of deploying, and that's part of the problem. And then they pull people who are actively deployed, accomplishing their mission, and send them home.
Colonel Bree Fram is a proud transgender service member. In fact, the highest ranking active duty transgender person serving in the United States military.
I plan on making my case that transgender people are capable, competent, and serve with distinction.
This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Hungarians protest Orban's pride ban. Federal court order Trump's military trans ban. And trans Colonel Bree Fram salutes inclusive armed forces. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 22nd, 2025. Thousands of Hungarians hit the streets of Budapest, chanting, "The people demand their rights," after Parliament passed a ban on LGBTQ pride marches. Opposition lawmakers set off rainbow flares in the chamber and distributed photoshopped images of autocratic President Viktor Orban kissing Russian President Vladimir Putin. Orban backed the bill, an extension of Hungary's 2021 child protection law. His 15-year reign as prime minister has been marked by anti-LGBTQ animus. Orban celebrated the March 18th passage of the pride ban, tweeting, "We won't let woke ideology endanger our kids." Protesters blocked traffic on Budapest's iconic Erzsébet Bridge with signs reading, "The first pride was a riot. If you take our human rights, be ready for human wrongs." The European Union was quick to condemn the repressive law. EU Commissioner for Equality, Haja Labib, tweet proclaimed, "Our union is one of freedom and equality. Everyone should be able to be who they are, live and love freely. The right to gather peacefully is a fundamental right to be championed across the European Union. We stand with the LGBTQI community in Hungary and in all member states." Orban and the EU have been in contention for more than a decade. The country's anti-queer laws have led to billions in EU financial aid being frozen. Budapest Pride organizers are defiant and promise to march as planned on June 28th. Under the new law, each of them and all attendees can be targeted using facial recognition and fined up to 200,000 forints, about $550. Last year, more than 30,000 people joined the event, and this year could be even bigger. Jojo Majersik of Budapest Pride told the Associated Press, "We've received many messages and comments from people saying, 'Until now, I haven't gone to Pride, I didn't care about it, but this year I'll be there, and I'll bring my family.'" Security forces and riot police may have their hands full.
A court-ordered pause at the Trump administration's plan to expel all transgender service members will remain in effect after a heated battle late in the day on March 21st. Judge Anna Reyes of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia had granted the government's emergency request that morning to review her temporary injunction against the ban. The Federal District Court's first openly lesbian judge has repeatedly pressed the Trump lawyers to provide specific proof of their claims. They argue that trans service members are disruptive and impair troops' ability to carry out their missions, but still have no data to satisfy Reyes' concerns. Their latest claim is that the ban only affects enlistees with gender dysphoria, the medical condition that transgender people experience when their gender identity and gender presentation are incongruent. Reyes questioned how it differs from any other treatable condition that does not preclude military service. She told beleaguered Trump lawyer Jean Lynn, "You are still excluding people who identify as transgender by focusing on those with gender dysphoria. The policy's impact is the same. This is still a ban on transgender service members." Reyes went on to slam at length what she sees as the government's hypocritical presentation of the issue. In her words, "I am not going to abide by government officials saying one thing to the public, saying what they really mean to the public, and then coming in here to the court and telling me something different, like I'm an idiot. I am not an idiot. This court is not going to be gaslit." The Secretary of Defense called it a transgender ban. "This idea that you all can just come in here and pretend or have us pretend that's what's happening is not actually what's happening is totally unacceptable. Everyone knows what the ban is intended to do. Everyone knows." Judge Reyes has now extended the stay on the injunction pending further submissions on the morning of March 28th by both the plaintiffs and the government. Thus, the Pentagon's previously announced March 26th deadline for trans enlistees to voluntarily resign is on hold. Reyes also specified that if any transgender service member is negatively affected before the stay is lifted, she would expeditiously consider their request for a temporary restraining order.
The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is phasing out treatment for gender dysphoria. The VA announced on March 17th that hormone replacement therapy and related health care for trans patients not already in treatment would be discontinued. The VA does not provide gender-affirming surgeries but has, until now, granted letters in support of veterans seeking them. President Donald Trump's executive order defending women is the justification given for the withdrawal of care. VA Secretary Doug Collins demonstrated his sensitivity to the issue by telling reporters, "I mean no disrespect to anyone, but VA should not be focused on helping veterans attempt to change their sex. The vast majority of veterans and Americans agree, and that is why this is the right decision." Several veteran organizations don't agree, including Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Their statement called it the ultimate betrayal of those who've served and sacrificed so much for our country. Meanwhile, several transgender prisoners are suing the Trump administration over the withdrawal of their gender-affirming health care. This according to reports in Mother Jones. The ACLU asked a federal judge on March 17th to issue a temporary injunction, allowing treatment to proceed while the legal challenge continues. At least one other lawsuit is challenging attempts by the Trump administration to move trans female inmates to men's prisons.
Finally, shareholders of the Walt Disney Company want nothing to do with the right-wing push to move back to the political neutral. A proposal submitted by the right-wing think tank National Center for Public Policy Research demanded Disney's withdrawal from the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index. It also called for the ending of the company's efforts to protect all employees from discrimination, offer equal benefits, and encourage an inclusive culture. The company's board of directors recommended a no vote, noting that the proposal would not provide any additional value to shareholders, as the center claimed. Barely 1% of Disney shareholders opposed the board's recommendation at their March 20th investors meeting. To Eric Blom, the Disney vote gives us a clear statement of values from Disney shareholders. Blom is the vice president of corporate citizenship at the Human Rights Campaign Foundation. He said, "Despite the growing politicization of DEI and workplace inclusion, leading global businesses remain committed to the belief that a welcoming, inclusive environment drives innovation, boosts productivity, and strengthens the bottom line. More than 765 companies participate in HRC's Corporate Equality Index, despite an organized online campaign in recent months to force them to abandon their workplace policies and programs promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI initiatives have been quashed at several major corporations in response to boycott threats by right-wing influencer Robbie Starbuck. His victims have included Amazon, Google, Ford Motor Company, Harley-Davidson, Target, Walmart, Microsoft, Meta, and Zoom. Disney has scored a perfect 100% in the Corporate Equality Index annually since 2007. Its shareholders now join Costco and Apple investors in resisting pressure from Starbuck and his internet trolls to dump so-called woke policies. However, some critics say that Disney's product may not be keeping up with its shareholders' commitment. They point to the axing of a transgender subplot in the Disney-Pixar animated TV miniseries Win or Lose, and the disappearance of Agent Pleakley's drag disguises in the live-action version of Lilo and Stitch.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 22nd, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Sarah Montague. Stay safe.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Transgender members of the U.S. military are on tinderhooks, waiting for the courts to rule on President Donald Trump's order to expel them. The Pentagon's original deadline for their voluntary resignations is running neck and neck with a federal judge's next hearing on the matter. The judicial battle will rage on, perhaps all the way to the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, a courageous trans soldier whose family has a history of valiant service refuses to leave her frontline post. She shared her story with This Way Out's David Hunt.
In the closing days of World War II, Sergeant Fred Hersicorn found himself on the receiving end of a tongue-lashing by General George S. Patton. The famously quick-tempered American general ordered Hersicorn and his crew to remove the heavy sandbags and extra armor they'd attached to the outside of their M4 Sherman tank, a vehicle notoriously vulnerable to the Germans' armor-piercing Panzerfaust grenades. Speed, not safety, was Patton's priority, as he led the Army's fast but lightly armored tanks across Europe to liberate the continent from the Nazis. Hersicorn's granddaughter, a colonel in the United States Space Force, probably wishes she had some of that discarded armor from World War II. But its value would be little more than symbolic. The attacks she faces today aren't on the battlefield. They're coming from inside the Pentagon, where she works to keep the U.S. combat ready. But don't call it friendly fire. The attacks are not accidental. Colonel Bree Fram, the proud granddaughter of a decorated Army tank commander, is a proud transgender service member. In fact, the highest-ranking active-duty transgender person serving in the United States military. To the commander-in-chief, Donald Trump, Fram, like all transgender service members, is the enemy. I'm David Hunt. On March 11th, I sat down with Colonel Fram to discuss President Trump's executive order banning transgender people from serving in the military. Unless the order is delayed or struck down by a federal judge, the military will begin purging its ranks of transgender service members this week at the direction of the Department of Defense. In fact, Fram says, the purge has already begun ahead of schedule.
We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we're already seeing the impact. We are seeing people placed on administrative leave. We are seeing people have punitive action taken against them, losing spots at school, being pulled out of prestigious programs, people being returned from deployment. You know, the policy says you're incapable of deploying, and that's part of the problem. And then they pull people who are actively deployed, accomplishing their mission, and send them home. People are also taking the voluntary separation action. So we are losing highly qualified people already because of the policy.
In his February 27th executive order, Trump said being transgender conflicts with a soldier's commitment to an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle, and is not consistent with the humility and selflessness required of a service member. The Trump administration is using both carrots and sticks to encourage trans service members to voluntarily quit the military. Those who leave willingly will receive significantly more severance pay and won't have to repay any bonuses they received, even if they have a remaining service obligation. Service members who stay and fight for their rights face a hostile, even degrading, work environment. They'll be forced to follow the standards of dress and grooming that align with the gender they were assigned at birth. That extends even to the bathroom and shower facilities they'll be required to use and how they'll be addressed by subordinates.
So that's a huge disincentive because no one wants to experience the dehumanization that comes with something like a forced detransition, which is what's going to be attempted on people based on the way the policy is written. I served under male standards for more than 15 years prior to being able to transition. And it does not matter how many years you've transitioned, or for trans people that have joined after transitioning, the government's position is that any history of it will force you to revert to previous standards. So there really is no way out right now as the policy is written.
Why? You may ask, would anyone go through the indignity of remaining in an organization that clearly does not value or respect them? Well, it turns out, the United States military is not just any organization. And service members, especially transgender service members, are not just government employees.
I plan on making my case that transgender people are capable, competent, and serve with distinction until the very last day I possibly can in wearing my nation's uniform. And that's incredibly important to me. I am a senior officer. I look around at the spirit of transgender service members and am so impressed by their courage and their bravery. How could I do anything less than try and stand with them and with the thousands of others who are making that same choice? Because we treat every single day as a gift. Every day is a gift in that we get to make more relationships with the people around us. We get to meet someone new who may never have met a trans person or a trans person in uniform before and shatter their stereotypes about who we are. And the longer we serve, the more opportunities we have to do that. And there's also the fact that we all took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. We have sworn to protect and defend this country, And we actually care. So we want to accomplish the mission we've been given and not let any of our teammates around us down, because if we depart, all of a sudden there's a hole in our unit that others have to fill and have to work even harder just to accomplish what the unit was doing while we were in it. There is absolutely a sense of responsibility and a duty to do not only what I can, but also to share the stories of others and to take care of others in any way that I possibly can. And that means working with people. That means picking up and answering emails and phone calls, not just from transgender service members, but also from their commanders and their peers, their leaders who call up and say, I've got someone in my unit. How can I help take care of them?
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. The status of transgender service members in the United States military has been what Colonel Bree Fram calls a wild roller coaster. As the nation's highest-ranking active-duty trans officer, she's experienced many of the twists and turns.
We have had less than a decade of open service for trans people. Some people thought that we would actually have had it for longer because some people thought that when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed in 2011, that trans people could serve openly. But it wasn't the case. It was going to be another 5 years until we got that, which I think was truly amazing that it was only 5 years, because trans rights in this country have historically been 10 or 20 years behind gay rights.
It was the last day of June 2016, Pride Month in the United States, when Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced the news. The ban on transgender military service was over. For Bree Fram, it was a defining moment in a journey that had started decades earlier.
I grew up and I knew from a very early age that there was something different about myself. I was Wonder Woman for Halloween when I was 3 and 4 years old, right alongside my younger sister. But I also, as I grew, understood what society's perception of trans people was, that this is something to be ashamed of. This is something to hide. And it really wasn't until my 30s that I got enough confidence in myself and enough self-understanding to say, no, this isn't something I like to do. This is who I am. But then I ran up against the barrier of, well, the military still says you can't serve openly. And so I did have to continue hiding who I was, even though I had accepted the fact that I was trans, and that's really who I was. So by the time 2016 rolled around and the Secretary of Defense made the announcement that trans people could serve openly, I was ready to go to come out to the world. And I had a post ready to go on Facebook and an email to my colleagues. So as soon as he finished talking, I hesitated. It took me a minute or two to gather the courage to hit post, to hit send. And then I lost it. I ran away. I found the gym buried underneath the Pentagon, and I hopped on the elliptical machine, and I say I went nowhere faster than I'd ever gone anywhere in my life, because the nervous energy of wondering how is life going to be different now was killing me. But eventually I had to go back to the desk. I sat down, and one by one, my colleagues walked over to me, shook my hand, and said, it's an honor to serve with you.
But the roller coaster ride was just beginning. A year later, in July 2017, the new president, Donald Trump, reinstated the ban with a tweet, a post on the social media platform Twitter. A month later, Defense Secretary James Mattis announced that currently serving transgender troops would be allowed to remain in the military, pending further study. While the Pentagon studied the issue, the federal courts blocked Trump's trans military ban until 2019. In April of that year, the ban was reinstated, but not rigorously enforced. President Joe Biden reversed the ban just 5 days after taking office in January 2021. And that's how things stood until Trump returned to the White House in January of this year. the better part of a decade serving proudly and openly in the military, has given Fram a clearer view of what it means to be a member of America's armed forces.
What do we expect in the military? It's that if we look to our left, we look to our right, if bad things happen, that person has my back. And so the way you prove that in most cases is be competent. And if you meet the standard, you're part of the team, people are going to respect you and they're going to work with you. People being able to transition in the military is such an amazing opportunity, not only for that individual to be their best self, but also for their unit to then take advantage of those relationships and those capabilities that come with someone being their best self and really exhibiting that growth mindset that is so critical to all of us to say, I can be better tomorrow than I am today.
Fram takes courage and inspiration from the service members with whom she serves and from a grandfather who loved and supported her.
I was his only grandchild to go into the military, and he was so proud that every time I'd get promoted, he'd just get this big, wide-eyed smile. And unfortunately, he passed a day or two after the trans ban went into effect the first time in 2019, and I was at his bedside when that happened. And the last words he spoke were to me, because he had got to see who I was, who the real me was by that point. And he told me to keep doing what I'm doing. And it touches me to this day that someone like him could see me, could understand, could get it, and to continue to push me to new heights.
There's one other thing you should know about Fram's grandfather, Fred Hirschhorn. He was an immigrant, a German Jew, driven from his home by the hate and intolerance of an authoritarian regime. On March 11th, 1936, Hirschhorn and his parents and grandmother boarded a ship in Cherbourg, France, bound for a new life in the New World. The journey he began that day, 89 years ago, isn't nearly over. It's carried on by his granddaughter as she walks, for now, the hallways of the inner rings of the Pentagon, at the heart of America's armed forces. I'd like to thank Colonel Bree Fram for sharing her story for this program. You can learn more about her writings and her podcast, Forged in Fire, at breefram.com. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
A preliminary injunction is currently keeping transgender service members like Colonel Fram from being expelled. U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes has directed the government and the plaintiffs in one of the lawsuits against the trans ban to bring her further submissions on March 28th. Reyes also vowed to see to it that individual transgender service members are protected until all the litigation is done. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap is reported this week by John Dyer V and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. You heard part of the U.S. Space Force anthem Semper Supra and music by Simon and Garfunkel, Joy Hanna, and Michael Shines. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KPOV Bend, Oregon, WOMR Provincetown, Massachusetts, 5GTR Mount Gambier, South Australia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Wolf Island and Kingston Massive. Saturday, April 5th, Canada's Reggae Ambassadors, the Human Rights, invites you to join us as we celebrate the release of our new album, One People, at the Hotel Wolf Island. Tickets are $25 advance at thehotelwolfisland.com, 30 at the door. Show starts at 7:30 and we'll be playing two full sets. Check out thehumanrights.ca for more info. That's the Human Rights One People album release party, Saturday, April 5th at the Hotel Wolf Island, right by the ferry docks. Presented in association with CFRC 101.9 FM.
What does existence mean to you? Collective Reflections, Queen's University's anti-oppression magazine, invites you to share your voice for Volume 12, Existence. From identity and resilience to celebrating cultural heritage, Collective Reflections welcomes poetry, short stories, essays, and visual art that showcase your unique perspective. Submissions are open now and due February 9, 2025. Let your creativity shine and be a part of this powerful collection.